Preston and Steve Fun Size Podcast.
I should clean out the junk drawer before we leave, or else some of these stories will expire and I'll never get to them.
And there'll be maggots when we get back.
Yeah, let me dig in. Okay, so I saw... It's okay. I saw this story. Is it ever okay to use the word literally to mean figuratively? There's some examples in great literature where it has been done. F. Scott Fitzgerald did. He wrote, he literally glowed. So did James Joyce, who wrote, Lily, the caretaker's daughter, was literally run off her feet. W.M. Thackeray wrote, I literally blazed with wit. Charles Dickens even used literally in a figurative sense by saying, lift him out, said Squeers, after he had literally feasted his eyes in silence upon the culprit.
So it's okay because they did it?
Well, they're taking license in a descriptive way.
And here is, so the official definition in a literal sense.
It's literally, or, by the way.
Literally, or manner, means actually. In effect, virtually. So that's what literally means. It means absolutely, specifically what it is. It's not...
It is a literal.
Yes, it is literal. So, but the thing is... Oh, go ahead, Kath.
No, I don't get it. So would when everyone says, I literally died, would that be okay then?
Well, in a regular definition, no, because they're still alive. Literally would mean...
You're dead.
You're dead.
You're dead. Right.
You're absolutely
dead.
It'd be harder
dead.
For you to say that.
If you said, literally, I'm on fire right now, there would have to be flames coming off of your body for that to be true.
Or out of your butt.
The difference is that Merriam-Webster has redefined literally, and they're not the only dictionary that has done that.
Book of words.
To mean figuratively. They're not the only book of words that have done that. So the Oxford English Dictionary, third edition, which came out in September 11th, said it's colloquial, used to indicate that some, and frequently conventional, metaphorical or hyperbolical expression is to be taken in the strongest admissible sense. Virtually as good as, completely, utterly, absolutely. So it's an expression, like it says here, to be taken in the strongest admissible sense.
Okay.
So when you're using it, I think if you're using it in a descriptive or hyperbolic way, you're given latitude.
Yeah.
However, when you say, what happened here? The man literally exploded. Well... Did he? No.
Right.
So.
But you could mean literally exploded emotionally.
Emotionally.
You know, I don't know.
What they're saying there's a gray area now.
Yeah,
literally.
I try to not use that word in that sense because it sounds ridiculous after a while.
See,
I think.
But I use it all the time for that reason, to make it the story or my point in my story.
Use it for emphasis.
Yeah,
right.
to emphasize what I'm saying.
Exactly. It's okay now is what is being said in these. They're in multiple books of words. They're saying yes.
So I guess there are smart ways to do it and stupid ways to do it. And one of the stupid ways of doing it is sportscasters will say things like, he is literally carrying the entire team on his back.
Right.
Yeah.
And that gets me angry every single time.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. There's another way you can phrase that.
Right.
You know, it's almost like he's carrying the entire team on his back.
Right.
You know?
It can be a lazy crutch, and we all have those. I mean, we're in broadcasting ostensibly. So I think that sometimes people just will use literally instead of saying really, or, you know, they'll use it as a crutch type of an adverb.
Yeah. But it's become so common that the dictionaries have had to go, you know what?
This has happened many times over the years where they've actually changed even the pronunciation of a word because it's been accepted so much the other way that it is now literally a new way to say it.
So it says there is strong impulse among lexicographers to catalog the language as it is used. And there is a considerable body of evidence indicating that literally has been used in this fashion for a very long time. All of the dictionaries listed also provided usage notes with the definition of literally, indicating that this sense is widely frowned upon. But... it's still used anyhow. So the use of literally in a fashion that is hyperbolic or metaphoric is not new. Evidence of this dates back to 1769. Its inclusion in a dictionary isn't new either. The entry for literally in our 1909 unabridged dictionary states that the word is often used hyperbolically, as in he literally flew. So if you're one of those people that's really picky about it, you kind of have to give a little bit of latitude, because they're even saying it's just been done so much.
By F. Scott Fitzgerald, no less.
It's been done so much that you can give it some latitude.
Yes.
Exactly. So, all right.
I thought that was interesting.
I do like that.
I'll pass along.
Literally fascinating.
It's literally awesome. Let me go to the junk drawer again. Kathy, you'll be on board for this one. It has to do with a shopping retail outlet.
Okay.
She sounds hyped up.
Lord and Taylor.
Uh-huh.
Hey. All right, you on board now?
Yes, I'm on board.
Okay, which was founded in New York in 1826, has been sold for $75 million to fashion rental subscription service Le Tote.
That's it?
What? Yeah, I actually thought the same thing.
You thought $75 million was a little light?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, go to Lord and Taylor all the time.
They've been struggling for a long time, but...
I mean, they're a national chain, right?
One of the King of Prussia.
There's literally one right up the road here.
Yeah.
Were they independent for a long time? Is that, and then they got sold to this tote company?
Yeah.
They were present. You had reported a while ago that they were actually, that they were taking the brand and making it parts of other department stores, Lord & Taylor.
Yeah.
And so that was part of the plan, but this literally comes as a shock.
So Hudson's Bay Company... which owns Lord & Taylor, we get an equity position in Le Tote and will continue to own the real estate and leases associated with the remaining 38 Lord & Taylor stores.
Totes my goats.
So the stores will function. Because I go to this one up the road here when
every
I forget
you,
my workout
yeah,
clothes.
Yeah, every time you forget your workout clothes. Steve has more workout clothes than any human because he just buys new ones.
I'm like Einstein. I have the same exact outfit.
So Hudson Bay owned Hudson's Bay and then also Saks Fifth Avenue.
So they had acquired...
And there's literally a Saks Fifth Avenue right up the other side of it.
Hudson Bay had acquired Lord & Taylor in 2012, but as the retail industry has been struggling, the department store chain has been losing money since 2016. So Hudson Bay agreed to sell Lord & Taylor's flagship Fifth Avenue store to WeWork in 2017.
I mean, I spent time in a department store just a couple of nights ago. And as
way
I was,
to brag.
As I was walking out of there, I was very dissatisfied. And I was thinking, no wonder, you know, these places are going out of business. It was a little ridiculous. There were, I think, four people working in all three floors of this place. I waited in line. I was the second person in line, and I waited 20 minutes.
What you're talking about, Casey, is exactly, in fact, why stores... There was a report that Preston had relayed to us about that shopping experience, about A, expediting it, making it more interesting, making it more more things going on, more amenities.
Right. So there was also a size that I wanted. I had them look on the computer to see if they had them had this particular size in the back. The computer said yes. Person went back there, couldn't find it or didn't find it or whatever, and then I ended up having to just order. So I had to do two orders. You know, one I paid for what I had in my hand, and then I had to do another order where they were going to deliver it to my house. The amount that I waited just to get to the register, I mean, it was 20 minutes easily. For the first 10 minutes... And maybe even 15 minutes, I was kind of like cool about it. I'm like, these things take time. And then I was with my youngest daughter. She looks at me like, what the F is going on here?
Stores,
I'm like, I know!
Stores, you can't overestimate the importance of having someone on the floor right there asking if you need help.
Yeah.
That it means everything. And when you're exactly right, when you can't find someone who works at the store, and that person has to be, what can I help you with today? And they have to be up, and they also have to be... Well, over here, it's almost like you have to be able to feel confident. Can I ask you about this? Would you happen to have this? And then you're going to get your sort of quasi-personal shopper who will help you. That enhances the experience.
Yeah, and then you end up in the hardware department asking where the panties are or what. You know what I mean?
You go to
some other department, and they have no idea.
I did a lap around the store twice before I was able to come across this person. No. Oh. And I thought, here's another funny little aspect of my trip to this store is when I ran into this person, he was asking like this 14 or 15 year old kid he was on a Razor scooter. He goes, hey, you're not allowed to. Can you please not ride the Razor scooter while you're in the department store? And the kid was like, oh, blah, 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 whatever. And the kid was being a dick to this guy. And so I asked the guy for some help. He and I lap around the store, and then we make it to the other side of the store, and I see this kid riding on his Razor scooter, and I yell at him. I go, bro, he told you not to ride the Razor scooter in the store. I go, don't be a dick. Get off your scooter and walk it.
Wow.
You're right? Why did you care?
Because I was so annoyed already.
And then having that to guy walk had, around the store. You left that apart. That guy had deputized you.
No, he did not deputize me. But you know what, Kath? I don't know why. I think I was so annoyed already.
Yeah.
And then
seeing the kid's attitude.
The kid's attitude, you know, to an adult. I'm like, dude, you know, be respectful of this guy. And the guy was actually nice about it, asking me to get off his
Razor
scooter.
How old was the kid?
I said about 14, 15 years old.
And you called him a dick?
I said, well, no, I didn't call him a dick. I said, don't be a dick.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Marissa wanted me to point this out. It explains the price of $75 million. So Lord & Taylor had 38 stores. Like Macy's has 641 stores.
Oh, wow.
So much smaller volume.
They better not get rid of this Lord & Taylor here. It's a good one. And the staff here is good. I know where am I working on clothes or occasionally my cologne.
But Steve, you bring up a good point because these brick and mortar stores are suffering and losing business, so they aren't able to maintain staff size.
Yes.
They eliminate positions, but then they don't have the people in the store to help you out. And it's a really hard double-edged sword to be a part of, to be in retail at this point.
If you're going to reinvest or if you're going to invest in the floor staff.
Yeah.
All right. Let me go back into the junk drawer.
Look at, we're solving problems.
Okay. So local company, engineering company called Benesch, Benesch. Not familiar with them. They're in Pottsville. So kind of where, you know, the Yuengling Brewery is.
Yes.
Out that way. They got a Hot Wheels car to roll across 2,176 feet of track and broke a Guinness World Record.
How?
Yeah, workers at the branch say they began planning the attempt in February. They gathered 100 volunteers to set up the track this week. Volunteers laid out nearly 1,400 pieces of track, and the toy car glided 2,176 feet, which beat out the previous record of 1,838 feet.
As a kid, I loved Hot Wheels cars.
Yeah, I
had the Hot Wheels track. I had that thing they used to call the powerhouse. Do you remember that?
Yep.
So the car would go through. It was a thing that had like spinning wheels, like drums. And when the car would go through it, it would catch both sides of the car and shoot it out the other side.
Yep.
I'm such a sucker for stories like this and world records for dominoes.
I'm glad you said that.
Dude, yes. And when they have these that go on and on, or, you know, giant Rube Goldberg machines.
They're great. OK Go videos.
Oh, my God. Yeah. They're so cool.
Yeah.
I like it when the dominoes go down and, like, a picture comes out.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes. How do they do that?
It's pretty amazing.
There is this young lady who's she's, like, one of the world's leading dominoes. Would you call it experts, artists,
engineers, maybe
engineers. Yeah. And the stuff she does is a mind blower. And so businesses will pay her to put on these things. But, you know, she'd take 2 weeks to set them up.
I assume this had to be downhill. I mean, for that car to keep going.
You would have to have it set up, and I'm not even looking at it. Okay, so we're looking at it right now. Yeah. Did they say how they were able to achieve enough velocity to keep it traveling that distance?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It had to have been a downhill grade in order for the car to keep rolling.
I'm looking at it right now. It doesn't seem that substantial a grade, but
I don't know.
But you have to figure out just the proper grade.
Yeah, it would have to be downward. Casey?
Yeah, I mean, you can't really tell the grade just, you know, from the track level or whatever. But, yeah, I think if the grade were too steep, you would really run into some problems. Because anytime you hit a bump, you know, you run the risk of the car falling off the track.
Mm. It does. Well, obviously, it requires proper engineering.
Nick, speaking of dominoes, there's that scene in, actually, a couple of scenes in the movie The Toy with Richard Pryor and Jackie Gleason, where he knocks over the dominoes.
Yeah.
And Jackie Gleason's character gets so upset. And when I was a kid, I was like, why is he so mad? I'm like, that was so cool looking. And it was because it had taken so long to set them all up.
But he had set them up, right?
Yeah.
Remember? Memories. Yeah. The toy.
Simpler all right, let's find something else.
Jackie Gleason.
Michael Collins, Steve, you know who he is.
Yes.
Yeah, he was. He stayed in the capsule when the Apollo 11, he stayed in the command module, I'm sorry.
You stay here.
When Neil and Buzz went down to the moon.
He was a critical part of the mission.
Apollo 11, absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't have done it without him. And he has recently said something about life in outer space. He has decided firmly in favor of extraterrestrials. In an online chat this week, marking the 50th anniversary of the first moon mission, Twitter users asked him about the food the astronauts ate, the music they listened to, and the technical side of flying to the moon. And one of the curious questioners asked, do you believe in life outside of Earth? And Michael simply replied, yes, and left it at that.
Cher asked him, do you believe in love after
life? Life after love.
Life after love. And he said yes.
He did. Okay, so he agrees with some very important things.
I have a question for Michael. Do you believe in life after love?
After love.
He actually has a really good sense of humor, if you've ever seen him interviewed.
Oh, yeah?
A really good sense of humor about the whole thing. And, I mean, if you stop and think, they had to have a whole series of things that he was told about, almost like the HAL 9000 computer, that the other two were not told about what to do if they could not retrieve them from the moon.
Oh, my God, I didn't even think about that. You're right. Yeah, there had to be a protocol. And for some reason, they couldn't get back up from the lunar surface to the command module.
What do you do?
There's no rescue option. He would have to leave.
Yeah.
You know, eventually. Wow. That's a tough one.
So he's not talking about E.T. or Independence Day.
Hi.
He's talking about, like, bacteria living on some asteroid somewhere.
Can I come in?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. They didn't say intelligent life. They just said life. So he said yes, which I agree. I also agree there's intelligent life somewhere in the universe.
It's too damn big. It would be ridiculous to think that there's not something out there.
But this got the UFO.
E.T., we saw it.
This got UFO enthusiasts in a bit of a tizzy because apparently on the third day of the mission, Apollo 11, Commander Neil Armstrong had spotted an object moving on a roughly parallel course with them as they zoomed towards the moon.
Aye.
The crew's best guess was that the mysterious object was the third stage of the Saturn V rockets that had launched them into space. Armstrong had radioed mission control in Houston and asked, do you have any idea where the SIVB is with respect to us? A few minutes later, mission control replies that it's about 6,000 nautical miles from you now, over. And that satisfied Armstrong, who said 12 seconds later, okay, thank you. And that was it. But that didn't satisfy conspiracy theorists, who were convinced that what the three pioneers had seen was nothing less than an alien spacecraft shadowing them as they made their groundbreaking journey, which I don't think he believes that that was the case. There's a difference between UFOs and believing that there is life somewhere else in the universe.
We are ready to transmit.
But it's funny to watch how they do hop on, jump on something like that.
I mean, there are other astronauts who have said, I think Buzz Aldrin has said that he believes, and there are things that they've seen when they were up and around that they can't explain, because something is a UFO doesn't necessarily mean it's an unidentified flying object.
Yeah, but it's something flying that they don't know what it is. It doesn't mean it's intelligent life or anything like that.
And they're very well, listen, we do not know. It's a big sucker out there, and there's quite the possibility.
What's that line in Contact? It'd be an awful big waste of space.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Awful waste of space.
Yeah. A lot of hubris to think we're the only ones.
All right. Let me go back in. The tallest, fastest, and longest roller coaster in the world is set to open in 2023. That'll be in Saudi Arabia. It's called the Falcon's Flight.
Man, does this look wild.
It could hit speeds of up to 155 miles an hour.
So did you watch the video?
No.
So the video, I'm thinking, okay, so how are they doing this? In each car that you're sitting in on the roller coaster, there is a big windshield that comes up over you, sort of, so that you're sitting in a protected thing.
Okay.
So this sucker goes up. It actually goes up along a cliffside of a mountain. What? And then goes over a small mountain or whatever. Anyway, it comes down and then goes to a tunnel through the mountain. And it's pretty amazing. Now, what we're watching is a virtual, rendering of what the trip would be like.
Yeah.
If they get it anywhere near this, it'll be fan-freaking-tastic.
Here's the deal. You know, back in the 60s, there was a race to, with the Russians to space and to the moon. And I feel like now there is a race between us and the Saudis to make this happen, because we can't allow this to happen in Saudi Arabia before the United States of America.
Oh,
are you with me?
We cannot accept the best roller coaster in the world being in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
By the end of the century, giving you boys a little more latitude than I did with the Space Project.
Right.
I want a roller coaster that takes you around Saturn and back home.
Wow. Dream big.
That's not too much to ask. So the
and I want gummy bears made of meat.
The ride is just one. One of the record-breaking attractions that will feature at the new Six Flags Qiddiya, I guess is how you say that, in Saudi Arabia.
155 miles an hour.
Does this park not exist yet as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
So a video...
They just have the Wally World statue up front.
A video mock-up shows a four-carriage ride, each carrying four passengers. It's designed to look like a robotic falcon. The ride features... A number of gravity-defying loops as well as winding tracks through the canyons. Launch-powered drops. Launch-powered drops will hit speeds of up to 155 miles an hour.
So they're powered. You know, normally it's just gravity that will take you through the drop on a roller coaster. These are actually picking up speed.
Powered drops.
With assistance.
I've never heard of that before.
And they take you through a tunnel, Preston, that has a whole, like, a circular light. It's almost like... I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think which is the ride at Disney.
Oh, it's Space Mountain.
Yeah, Space Mountain.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing.
So the 79-acre Six Flag Qiddiya will have six lands, which will be named the City of Thrills, Discovery Springs, Steamtown.
Steamtown.
Yeah.
That's the greatest collection of steam I've ever seen.
Twilight Gardens, Valley of Fortune, and Grand Exposition.
All of them sound boring, but I'm sure they're going to, you know, what do kids like? They love steam.
Total of 28 rides and attractions are currently planned. Yeah, so cool. Steamtown.
I tell you, when you say steam, the kids go crazy.
It's right next to Fog Village.
Yeah, Fogville and the Moisture.
Yeah.
Moistureland.
So this comes out in 2023?
Yeah.
So this gives me like another 3 years to talk about this with a listener friend of ours at the... For the next 3 years, we have a listener who loves roller coasters.
Loves
so
roller
much.
Coasters and snowblowers.
Yes.
In fact, his ultimate roller coaster would involve riding a snowblower.
Oh, my God. Falcon's Flight will feature the city of will be featured in the City of Thrills.
He should consult them.
Along with the tallest...
Why do you always wear those sunglasses?
The tallest drop tower ride in the world, Sirico Tower.
Have you... When was the last time you were to an amusement park with coasters?
It's been too long. I was just thinking about everything. I think we skipped all last season and didn't go anywhere.
I'm itching to get back.
Yeah. I'm dying to get back on El Toro and Nitro over at Great Adventure because those are two of my favorite roller coasters.
You know, Jim Antes, who likes to bet on how much poop he steps in?
Right.
His wife was one of the people who, like, books, you know, trips and stuff like that to Universal.
Yeah,
and so I was looking at potentially... That would have been a nice return,
but they book
up solid because there's all these things now that are happening in those parks, and you really have to plan in advance unless you go to like a straight coaster park. And I always wanted the Cedar Rapids one. I wanted to. Yeah.
You didn't go to Dorney last year for
I had a conflicting appearance.
I was my son. I finally got him on roller coasters last year.
In fact,
Dorney
was the last time. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm excited because
Dorney's great.
Well, I didn't have any. You know, if I brought my kids to an amusement park, we really wanted to go on roller coasters. So now I finally have roller coaster buddies.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Taking to Saudi Arabia.
By the way, Falcon's Flight will beat the current fastest roller coaster in the world, which is Formula Rossa in Abu Dhabi. The Ferrari World Ride, it currently accelerates from 0 to 150 miles an hour in 5 seconds. So they've already got a 150-mile-an-hour roller coaster.
And they're building another one in Sion, Hong Kong.
Other exciting roller coaster openings include a 21-story Giga Coaster in Kings Island.
Where's that?
That's here in the U.S. It's near Kentucky, isn't it?
Oh, I'm thinking of Kings Dominion. King's Dominion is near Busch Gardens down in...
I've been to Kings Island. Maybe it's closer to Tennessee.
Ohio, it says, I guess.
Okay.
But no, it might be near... Yeah, it's in Cincinnati, which is near Kentucky. So,
okay, yep. So the ride called the Giga Coaster for having drops over 300 feet also reaches speeds of up to 91 miles an hour.
I love this stuff.
I do, too.
I love even the virtual. I'll put on the VR, just... Do that.
Yep.
I've seen videos of people falling.
Fall forward. It's hilarious.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
I love it. All right. Do I have time for another one?
Yeah.
see. Hang on a second here.
Keep going through.
Root around. You want to get up in it?
Well, I'm deciding on whether I throw something for Kathy to participate in or not.
Okay.
I mean, we did give her a poop topic earlier.
I did pick it.
Lord and Taylor.
Yeah, that's true.
How many products do you use on your face on an average day?
Does, like, including makeup?
Face wash, moisturizers, serums, foundations, etc.
Oh, okay. You want me to count?
Does that include man batter?
Count them. Sure. Yeah, why not? It's a product, right? It's a byproduct.
What do you, how many?
You just won't count that one, Kathy.
No, I'm not going to count that one.
All right, go ahead.
Because I use it too.
Okay, so I mean, I wash my face and lotion. Soap. I use
lotion.
Yeah. And then makeup would be the foundation.
Three.
Are we counting eyeshadow and stuff? No, probably not. Let's just say that.
How many products?
Yeah. All right, yeah, okay, come so on, man. Eyeshadow.
All right, so that's four.
Lipstick on your eyes and eyeshadow on your lips.
Yeah. You use like a lip gloss or
oh, okay. Yeah. Well, you want to do so all of that?
Everything.
Okay. So lip gloss, and then you'd have to go mascara.
Okay. That's six.
And blush, depending on the day.
Okay. And blush. So that's seven.
And then you got to do all, we got to take all that off, right?
Well, I already said the face wash.
Yeah. What about the fake moles and stuff that you draw on?
No.
All right. So 26% people said zero. Also, 26% said they used one product. 21% said two. 11% said three. 6% said four. 2% said five. And only 1% said six, seven, or more.
Wow. So I use one.
But that's not on an everyday basis. That's if I'm.
That's what it means. It says every day.
Well, so that's like if I'm going out somewhere, that's what I'm using. But I guess no, I guess I use the majority of those when I'm coming to work.
Okay.
But on the weekends, it's zero.
None.
Unless I have somewhere to go.
You wash your face.
Yeah, I guess so. It would be one in the lotion. No, it would be two.
Okay.
Sorry. I put on sunblock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really wash my face. I mean, in the shower, I'll be washing my hair and I'll
rub my face.
I'll let water, you know.
Here we go again. I'm going to get comments again now.
You're going to get comments.
Yeah, remember
again?
I told you somebody came up to me and was like, I can't get over the leg thing.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't wash his legs.
I had somebody, so I used
to. He just lets the water pour down them.
For years, I washed my face with Dove soap, like the same soap that I washed my body with. Cool. And someone was like, I can't believe you do that. And now I just recently in the past couple of years, you know, bought something specific for my face.
Hey, did Marilyn Chambers use Dove soap? Wasn't that her thing?
Ivory Snow.
That's right.
But you know what? I remember, you know, because as a kid, now as a teenager, to avoid acne, I wash my face like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And I would use Steve's Strident pads.
Strident pads. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And I thought I saw something a while back saying that that really doesn't work.
Do anything?
No, it doesn't really. Because of your age and hormones and what you're going through, and acne is a whole different thing. Acne is a skin condition, not necessarily a cleanliness thing.
Right.
Sometimes, though, like, for example, if I use a particular sunblock for, you know, a long time in a row, I'll break out a little bit because it's holding in the oils in your face.
Yeah. No, yes, that will happen. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But so as far as the percentages go, though, Preston, I think that I find that low. I find that low because that would mean that the majority of women are not wearing any makeup.
Right. And I agree but it says here's foundations. I assume that means makeup, but maybe they left makeup off of this.
That just women or is that women and men?
All people.
Are we talking?
So that's probably why those
percentages are
just a little bit skewed, Kath, because guys don't use that.
Or unless
many
you're
things.
Not counting like you're not counting mascara,
right?
Eyeshadow.
That might be the case. You're talking about stuff like face creams and moisturizers and things of that nature, as opposed to regular cosmetics.
Yeah. Have you guys seen that that like blackhead vacuum that they have now?
Yeah,
a vacuum.
Basically, that's what it is. I don't know any other way to sort of
Marissa looks
describe it.
Really excited on the other side there. Hang
have
on.
You've seen it? I assume.
Do
Marissa?
You know what he's talking about?
Oh my god! Yeah, it haunts me on Instagram all the time. But I have a feeling it'll be super disappointed. Like, remember when those strips came out? That you
put on your nose?
Yeah,
they worked.
Yeah, but not like as amazing as these videos make it turn out to be.
Okay, so we're looking at a video of this, yeah.
It's like a Biore strip, but that like sits and then you peel it off. This is just a little vacuum that you kind of scrape along your nose and it just kind of like takes all the stuff out.
I guess
oh my God.
Look how gross that is, Kathy.
But you know what? I will say both of them, including the Bure strip, you've got to do it after you wash your face and your pores are open. That's when you'll see the result.
There's some dead flesh coming up in this sucker.
Look at all that pus.
Oh,
all
right, man.
This one's gross. No, put up like the ad where it's just like cute.
Where it's a cartoon
pus. Makes it look fun.
Yeah. It's like a cute girl that's just like, oh, look at all these blackheads I have.
Speaking of ads like that, do you remember those... those hair removers.
Epilates?
I guess so. Essentially, it was like a spring
that you would rip the hair out.
Rip the hair out from the root. I remember my sister had one of those. I remember taking that on my arm and going, Jesus.
Yeah. It was horrible.
Insanely painful. And the commercials would be like a smiling woman going, hey.
Because it wasn't actually
instead
on.
Of what it really is.
Oh, my God. Those things were just, they were pain.
It was just like, getting your hair caught in a spring.
Hey, I noticed something at the...
oh, my God.
Wait a second.
No,
I'm not
kidding me. Over.
I didn't even
Something's
mean that.
Something's happened. It was a big mistake. We were actually the noticer all the time.
We were in the staff meeting yesterday. I think Jackie Bam Bam shaves his arms.
Oh, he shaves his whole body.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, yeah. Look at his right arm next time.
I did.
See him. Yeah, and then look at his left arm.
I didn't look at his left arm.
But his right arm has hair on it, and his left arm does not.
Is that a statement?
His right arm had stubble yesterday, so he must be shaving his right arm.
I was
arm.
Sitting behind him, so I was looking at one of his arms. Maybe I got him backwards. But, he shaves a lot of his body, if not all of it.
But up near his shoulder and bicep are all these big, he doesn't shave
hair.
Up there.
Right,
so
okay.
Like big...
Patches
gnarly
of hair.
Hairs.
Really?
Not patches, but big, long hairs. And then on his forearms, it was all stubble.
Does anyone know why?
I thought about asking him, but...
A lot of the stuff he wears is very diaphorous and...
What does that mean?
Like silky and flowy, and so I think maybe that gets caught on.
I tell you what, dude, so this bracelet I'm wearing right here rips the hair out of my wrist all the time. And in fact, Kathy, so, I wear... From time to time, I wear a necklace, they're beads, like this bracelet that I'm wearing here. You've probably seen it. And if I wear that, I have learned I have to shave my neck.
Oh, your neck hair.
Yeah. Damn, that hurts.
Yeah. Damn.
It rolls around and rips the hair out of your neck.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why, because he wears all these little bangly
things.
True.
Maybe. Yeah, he wears a ton of stuff.
I guarantee it,
He wants to be a woman.
Somebody in a band somewhere said in an interview that they shaved their whole body, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to do that too. I'm going to be just like Nikki Sixx. It's got to be something like that.
Okay. All right. Hang on. I want to go to Tony. She has one of those blackhead vacuums. Hi, Tony. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, I bought one of those at a store, and Marissa's 100% right. They're awful. They don't work half as well as they claim that they do. I had a whitehead that was primed for popping, put the little doohickey over it, and all it really did, it gave me a hickey on my chin.
Okay.
So I had a hickey on my chin.
That sucks, because in the thing, it looks like it's just absolutely reversing all the evil skin conditions this woman has.
It sucks, but it doesn't suck.
Oh, okay. Well, that's disappointing.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah. So was it the Bure strip is the thing that works?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're saying, Kathy, do it after you get out of the shower?
Yeah, so the pores are open, and then, the Bure strip goes on there, it hardens, and then you can peel it off.
What sucks is if you do get, like, a zit or so, and you, you're like, okay, let me take a crack at this. You squeeze it, and nothing happens, and it just kind of hurts.
I hate that.
And then you've entered into this territory. Do I keep working on it?
Yeah. The wait and see?
Or do I wait?
Wait and see.
And if you can even wait a couple days, and it's still tender, I'm like... I think I'll have another squeeze.
It's just a waiting game now.
Let me go and try that, and still won't go. And all you're doing is just making it worse, and it hurts.
I always remember in school.
What do you do?
The belt sander.
Yeah,
yeah.
I always thought there'd be like when you stepped out of the shower, there should be like facially like a thing made of not absolute sandpaper,
right?
But where you could like have it sort of
like
stick your face. Yeah,
a buffer of sorts. The face buffer.
Buff your face.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's still time to. Create that, Steve. I'm sure there's a patent out
That's
there.
That's
going to
be my moneymaker.
All right. Anyhow, it's
like the makeup shotgun.
It's the it's the junk drawer. Thank you for letting me clean it out, and we're good to go now.
More podcasts from Preston and Steve available at PrestonandSteve.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.